Hari Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. All right. Just in the previous section, chapter 22, I was trying to figure out why there is so
chapter
much
22
on the Lord's progress I couldn't really connect what was the connection to that section.
Chapter 22.
Page.
Oh, page 22. I was thinking chapter 22 or chapter 1, and the last one had 19. Just some. How do you call it then? The hidden chapters in the Bhagavata.
I was wondering why of his opulences in this section that the Vairagya is emphasized. I couldn't really make the connection.
I think they're all connected with Virya and Vairat. Here said, because he said tapa, right? And then he's connecting here is that he's the one to ordered you to undergo penance. It was I, right? It means Krishna is the one who is it. Because otherwise he just heard the words. He didn't know who it was. So now Krishna is like that. When you are perplexed in your duty, right? So in other words, what to do. So tapasya is what one does. Right? Because tapasya means the austerity of performing your duty.
What is the connection with performing the duty of Vairagya?
Because then then you get what's called sacrifice. So now when you voluntarily give up the results of your duty for someone else's benefit, that's called sacrifice. Does that make sense? So that'll be the connection. And therefore penance and I are non-different. Okay. I maintain it by the same energy. I withdraw it by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power, viryam, right, as the original Sanskrit word of the verse, is penance only. So, in other words, this because virya is considered that one has shakti, one has power, like the kings, they're, you know, have virya. You know, that chivalry, that power, that comes from penance. Right, because they themselves are trained properly as brahmacharis, they went through all their studies, they went through all their practices, the martial arts, it's just again and again repeating their knowledge, all these things, so that's where their power is from. So that's where someone who is performing penance, they're powerful, so they have virya. And then from that we see is then, he says, the energy, so the energies are the Aishwarya. So there's a connection there between Virya and Aishwarya, because that's Prajumna. And in here, then, who we're dealing with within the universe, that's Garbhodaksha, right? Who is Prajumna. Okay? You see, that's the ideas. We learn all these different, formulas. And then as we go, we start to see the connection between them. Because you see, sometimes the Acharyas we'll start off talking about one of the formulas and end discussing a different one. Because they're the same. Does that make sense? Like some days they're talking about the Lord, and then they say he's Aniruddha. Because he's the goal. Right? At the same time as that's Paramatma. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. Yeah, so it's just a matter of that aspect. So here's this article that I mentioned, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Okay, so this is a story from the life and teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Once some devotees were sent to establish a preaching center in Bengal. They worked day and night, equipping it as a beautiful temple. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati arrived to install the deities. He was very pleased and asked about one brahmachari who had worked hard on the preparations. The disciples told him, "Master, he became entangled with a lady. We rebuked him so much for his behavior that he fled from this place." Srila Bhaktisiddhanta replied, "I don't want to establish a preaching center here, nor do I want to install the deities. In this world, we spend hundreds of gallons of blood to bring a person out of the clutches of Maya. If that person makes some mistake, it will be washed away by his serving Hari, Guru, and Vaishnavas. But you have chastised him, and he has gone away. I do not want to make a center here. Search for him and bring him to me. Otherwise, I will go away." The anxious disciples began to search for that brahmachari. Madhav Maharaj, who at that time was named Hayagriva Brahmachari, found the errant brahmachari, apologized, and asked him to return. The brahmachari wept, saying, "I was serving here in a watch company, but I was not really happy. I wanted to return, but I was thinking, how can I show my face?" Because the chastisement is so strong. Because, see, this is the point that he's making. Difficulties, there's no such thing as difficulties on the social platform. Because being in the material world is already a sinful position. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like us sitting in the prison, you know, not even one of these white-collar prisons, but I mean, you know, the heavy-duty, you know, very well-guarded, you know, like, means they have a couple of walls. We have 9 walls, and each one is 10 times thicker than the last, right? Yeah. You know, so it means in calculation, if the inside of the universe was an inch would be, what?
About 2.5 centimeters.
2.5 centimeters. Yeah. Then the actual coverings would be from here to Krishna Nagar.
Okay.
Now that's a secure prison. Okay, so that's the kind of security we're in. And then we're going to make comments, right? Mm. So in other words, it's only that these are useful for advancing in Krishna consciousness, because then one is stable, steady, not distracted. That's why they're useful. Yeah. It's a very different perspective. This is the problem, because we're so used to good work gets good result. It's a fruitive, this concept of morality is 100% fruitive. Right? Because if people are good, I will get good results. If they're bad, I may get trouble. Right? That's what it said. A world religion cannot become popular if it doesn't have 2 aspects. 1, a supreme, and 2, doing good for others. If it doesn't have these 2, then maybe there's so many philosophies that are there. We hear of these great, you know, philosophers, but they don't become popular. Why? Because they lack 1 or 2 of these. But any religious process, philosophy that has these 2 is automatically popular. Why? Because if there's a supreme, okay, there's a position of authority, and that means somebody's in charge to give me what I want. And 2, if everybody is doing work for others, I can get benefit. You understand? Because underlying, there is no other like that. Well, I'll try to find, there's another article just on that one. Okay, so I did not go. But I wanted to return, but I was thinking, how can I show my face? So I did not return. He at once went running and weeping to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, thinking him more merciful than Krishna himself. And all his anartas were washed away in a moment. Bhaktisiddhanta told his disciples, quote, "The purport is that we should not criticize anyone, whether a devotee or a worldly person." Then he quoted a shloka. Quote, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one should neither praise nor criticize the conditioned nature and activities of other persons. Rather, one should see this world as simply the combination of material nature and the enjoying souls, all based on the absolute truth. Whoever indulges in praising or criticizing the qualities and behaviors of others will quickly become deviated from his own best interests by his entanglement in illusory dualities." Srimad Bhagavatam 11:28, 1-2. So it means Because the point, if we're praising or criticizing the conditioning, then the difficulty is praising it, what's real about it? Right? And if we're criticizing it, what's the criticize in an illusion? You know? Like we were saying before, it's all these guys are sitting around and on their sand dune and all hallucinating, you know, and each one's talking about how their mirage is better than the other guys. You know? So the thing is it's not real. So the point is it's what's connected to Krishna. Devotees are praised because they're doing things connected to Krishna. That's the value. But what's not connected to Krishna, what's the point? Okay. Bhaktisiddhanta continued, to bring a person from the clutches of Maya is very, very hard. If lust or any other attachment is present in that person's heart, it will go away very soon. If he is chanting and remembering and listening to Harikatha. Okay. So this very soon, because we look at everything, you know, as our lifetime, that this is a great length of time. But we're talking about the eternal platform. That's why the acharyas don't take it that seriously. When you're working on eternal time, then even 100 years isn't a big deal, especially, you know, even a shorter time. Right? So that's the perspective. Be very careful. Don't criticize devotees or non-devotees. First look at your own condition and try to purify yourself. Is there any lust in you? Is there any kutinati, deceit in you, or not? Be worried for that. Don't worry for others. Sri Guru and Lord Sri Krishna are responsible for others. We cannot do anything to help them, so you have no right to criticize. Oh, glories to Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Right? So unless you can actually correct it, if you can remove the anartha, then you can criticize it. If not, then what's the point? Like that. Does that make sense? You know, we will of course cloak it in, well, truth has to be spoken, everybody has the right to know, all these kind of, you know, very nice little mundane answers. But technically speaking, what's the point? Like that. Yes.
So what if they're affecting others?
But you're talking about the principle. Mm. It's not about them, it's about the principle. Right? In other words, there's a devotional process. And why is it a problem? Means because it gets in the way of devotional service. It distracts from devotional service. So the chastisement here wasn't making him more aware of devotional service, understanding what his position. They were speaking, you know, on the social platform, he's a brahmachari, this is nonsense, you're supposed to be the big collector, big organizer, and now you're doing this. It's all social.
Yeah.
You know, because if you ever hear these things come up, these are the only points that will be made. There are no spiritual points made. Because the spiritual point is, it's how does it deviate one from chanting? Because in other words, it's a waste of time. So many other things are a waste of time. This is more of a waste of time. Why? Because you're doing little things like that. The guy's sitting there playing on and putting together the crossword puzzle. It's a waste of time, but it's not that much of a waste of time as the regulative principles. Right? Because they're more intense, they're more absorbing. Right? So nowadays, possibly you could say some of these, you know, high-end video games, they would be more distracting than the four regulative principles. Right? You know, because people get in there and play them until they die, literally. There have been people who have died playing the games because they don't eat, they don't drink, they don't sleep, and they've died. Right? You know, so most people don't get involved in the four regulative principles till they die. You know, it's very rare. You know, like, I mean, sometimes old cardinals and stuff like that. Yeah, but other than that, then, you know.
Out with a bang.
Yes.
He had some Vaishnava Parad committed to that French cardinal.
Maybe. Oh, there was something else added to that.
When he was dealing with Prabhupada, Nari.
Oh, he met Prabhupada.
He was a French cardinal in the 70s, yeah. Oh, Prabhupada okay. Met with him as a preacher.
Yeah.
And he was very arrogant towards Prabhupada.
Oh.
And then he was found, passed away in very inauspicious circumstances.
Yeah.
With ladies of the night, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Right, so in other words, one should be careful. That's the whole thing, that it's always warned, because it's considered, of all the things, the criticizing of devotees is the most difficult of all the anarthas. Because we're looking at it, they have these other anarthas, but technically, Hriday Darbalya is considered a lesser. Yes. Kutinati, the criticizing Vaishnavas, and that is considered the primary, and from that everything else comes.
Yes.
Right? So therefore, it doesn't make sense criticizing somebody for an anartha that's technically lower, though it's morally made. It means, in other words, criticism may be an accepted norm, especially in certain circles. There are circles I've met where, you know, Western circles, where they don't appreciate making comments or criticizing about other people, just as general. These are karmis. But it's more rare to hit such circles. But the circles that kind of set the flavor of the world, you know, to do the editorials, do all these different things, and that the criticism of others, it's a game. It's just what they do. It's just they call each other friends because they spend the time to criticize each other, you know, like that. So it's kind of weird. But
if you don't criticize, you're not intelligent. Basically,
yeah,
seems to be there.
That's there. You're not intelligent, but also puts you in a senior position. So if you're intelligent, you're always on, wouldn't be on the top. So, but it's popular. Yes.
It's interesting that here Kuchinat is translated to in deceit.
Because that's what it is. It's deceitful. It means it's like, you know, because the point is in a pleasant way, you have, you know, the acharya, when everybody's coming along with something that's obviously not a righteous act, and everybody has their stone. He says, okay, if no one here has done anything, because the point is you're supposed to purify, right? So therefore, you shouldn't be, you know, performing the punishment if you yourself are punishable. So whoever is, you know, squeaky clean, then hey, let's do it, you know. And so everybody kind of turned around and walked off, you know, like that. Now, if you could just have enough of those, you get enough rocks, you could build something, that, you know. So, but it wasn't exactly a construction trick. It was, you know, in other words, that's kutinati. Everybody's there, like, yelling and screaming and this and that, but generally, I've seen generally, why would you scream if it doesn't mean anything to you? You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. People only jump up and down about things that mean something to them.
Yes. So they wish that they could do it.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. Yeah, they're doing it, I'm not doing it, you know, so they should be punished. Right? It means that there is. But you have to dig a while to get to that. But the point is it's always, that's the problem with the social platform. It has these low-end things. Unless you're dealing with varnashram, then there's reasons for that. Right? Because what's the reason in varnashram that there shouldn't be illegal liaison? It's very simple. There's a whole chapter of Manu dedicated to this point.
Instead, progeny?
Shankar, that's all. Because if they're not married, if they have a child, then that child will be a ghost. And generally a ghost, someone's a ghost not for being that pious.
Mm.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And generally when these things happen, it's by lust. So they don't make a check if their natures are similar. It's just if there's mutual attraction. Therefore you get a mixed personality, which will create problems in society. That's why varnashram doesn't like it. So that's on the mode of goodness level. Like, so people are working on morality, which is lower than that. So it's just because who knows why? You know? Really, who knows why? Because if they were so worried about it, why is everybody mixing so freely? Right? That's the thing. Everybody's mixing so freely, and then someone goes wrong, and everyone throws up their hand, and, oh, whoa. How did this happen?
Yes.
You know, like that, you know, what am I talking about? Like that. So that's why it's his point, is then what's the meaning?
Yes.
From the devotional, then these things are a distraction because they're so intense, they distract you. You're not involved in the quality of hearing, chanting, associating, everything goes down. That's why they're avoided from the devotional platform, because they're not a medium to please Krishna. Krishna's a universal form. You're dealing with him only. It's not the way you deal with him. In other words, if in universal form, there's the masculine and feminine principle. So the masculine principle is him, the feminine principle is him. So whichever one you're dealing with, then that's dealing improperly against the rules is the improper way to deal with the universal form. So how is it service to the Lord? That's why it's not good. But generally you'll just get answers. Well, everyone knows there's low class. You'll get nothing in the way of intelligence. It won't reach beyond mind and mind. Right? It won't get into intelligence. And definitely it won't get from intelligence back into the Shastra or into the devotional. It's just bad. It's not good. Everybody knows. It's wrong. Okay, yeah, but why? So that's his point. You know, so that's why I said the teacher might criticize, because he's going to do his best to adjust it. But even then, one is careful, because it's actually Krishna that removes the anarthas, if the person's sincere. So in other words, the chastisement will be so that the sincerity is there and the proper dealing with Krishna is there, so that you get his mercy, then the anartha is removed. So in other words, this devotee came, he surrendered to Guru. That's what pleases Krishna. But nowadays we'd say, no, but he did this, we can never forget that. Right? And the worst part is the ones who are always there to remember, they don't have this problem. Right? The ones that forgive and forget are the ones who will never forget. Not sure if that was too subtle, but we'll leave it at that. Yes.
In our association, we see that their devotees, they bring the best of our nature out,
yes.
And then it's very pleasing association. Then they are neutrals.
Yes.
And it's kind of okay, you know, haribol, haribol. And then there's some people, they bring the worst of our nature, mm-hmm. and they really do it. And we try to stay away from them. These people just like to do this. So how do we deal with that?
I mean, are you talking about ones that we call friends, or are you talking about ones that are inimical?
Different. Just people can just. It's like, I don't know, marmas or something. They just touch you, and then it's like the whole previous anarthas or.
Oh, it means getting upset and angry.
Everything, the whole like ugly nature comes out.
Oh, that's it. But that's their pleasure. Because it's intense. The point is if relationships are nice, they have a fullness and a completeness. And if you can't get it by positive, then this is another way of doing it. So in the modern, people don't know what relationships are. So much of the time, this is a very popular way to get an intensity.
So this is their interaction, actually.
This is how they interact. So it's not that they're trying to get you upset to just annoy you. They're trying to do something to get you upset, because for them, now we're talking emotion, now we're talking, you know,
real.
This is real interaction. So all you have to do is be pleasant, and then you're no fun, and they'll do it with someone else.
It's just difficult to control the slowness.
It is, but it's just, if you know that these persons do that, then just, you know, try the cucumber approach. Right, you know, and then you won't be any fun anymore.
Okay.
You know, because it's just like little kids; they bother each other, and when they get upset, then it's fun. But if they don't get upset, it's not fun at all. They stop. That's the whole. Okay. So continue on 23. The Bhagavatam's presentation of the Vedic cosmos as the virya of the Lord sweeps relentlessly through the cluttered bazaars of materialistic conceptions, where we haggle over the values and proofs of whatever worlds we think we live in. What worlds are these? Some of us wager our world to be the mundus intelligiblis, an imperfect world devised by a perfect intelligence. Our limited, defective human intellects are supposed to find the ultimate ecstasy of truth and beauty by discovering the perfect platonic nous behind the faulty appearances of nature. Nous is the root of the word nominus, used by Srila Prabhupada in his translation of Bhagavad Gita 7.2 in contrast to another Greek-rooted philosophical term, phenomenal. Bhagavad Gita 7.2 reads as follows, I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. Nous is an original, inviolate, timeless intellect that is completely impersonal. Its impersonality is proven by Plato's contention that the art of poetics is useless, for words fail to reach the original beauty and truth. Right? But he's very carefully picks these two words. Yeah. Right? Words can only describe the attractive but empty illusions of the sensual world. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.19 counters this by proclaiming Krishna to be Uttama Shloka. He was described with choice poetry that his devotees never tire of hearing. How exactly are we to get in touch with this platonic nous is still being argued by philosophers millennia after Plato's death.
Right. So he was what? 2,000 years, right? 2.5 or 3? 2.5. That seemed to be a good era. 2,500. A lot was going on.
Yeah, it was all happening.
Yeah. Other people scoff at the intellectuals, right? So this is one world, what he's talking about. So he's saying, where we haggle over the values and proofs of whatever worlds we think we live in. Because it'll start from the values. So one is this intellectual thing, is that there is this imperfect world. Beyond that, there's this perfection. But they don't know what that world beyond that's perfect. They don't know its power, that it can enter into this world and empower the things. Therefore, the verses and all that are empowered. They carry the Lord's. And they're non-different from the Lord, because these verses specifically carry that Lord's potency. So they are his potency. Right? And so then we can, therefore, the things of this world can be empowered with that. So yes, it is an imperfect world, and by words alone you can't describe. But when those words are in line with the teachings of the Acharyas, they become empowered by the chit potency. They can describe. This is what they miss. That's why they can't get beyond. So they don't even properly get to the Brahman platform. But even if they do, then the difficulty comes up is they can't express. You know, that's only sat. They don't understand chit and ananda. But yogis sometimes, then the Lord is jnana, or knowledge. But then technically you're back in sambandha. So then you're just, it's the existence aspect of sat. Right? It's not specifically the jnana of applied knowledge that's in chit.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
Chit,
yes.
Is that vijnan?
Which?
Chit.
Yes, you could say jnana vijnana, and then you're going to, and then with that you're going to act. Right? So that's, action means you have a value. So that you could say is vijnana. That's why what we're doing is called sadhana bhakti, because we don't have the vijnana. Right? So we perform the activity because we're supposed to be by jnana. And though by keeping doing it, contemplating it, then it comes up, we get the results, and then we start to realize. Then it becomes a real value, rather. In other words, we value having the value, though we don't have the value.
Yeah.
But by practicing the value, we develop the value.
Like Prabhupada said, pretend to be dancing.
Yes. You know, but at the same time, the ecstasy comes. You know, so that's the point, is that it is the process, it is dynamic, it does work. So if we just take part, it works.
If you don't have ecstasy, fake it. It's called
sadhana bhakti. Yes, that's the point. He's very good at saying it in a very understandable language. One of our best. No, that's there also. Really, that's, is that very nicely being able to give those principles.
Yeah.
He's very good at that.
Because
he would do a lot of college preaching.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with people that, you know, pride themselves in being smart. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they don't have substance. So you give them something and it makes them better. Other people scoff at the intellectuals. Okay, now here's a different world. They're no better than impractical dream chasers, right? Because this is not real. You know, we want to get down to the substance. Now we speak of philosophers known as the pragmatists. They are convinced we live in a mundus sensibilis, right? Not and then a mundus intelligibilis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Sensibilis. How come they got an extra I in here and these ones didn't? Or is it supposed to be intelligibilis or just gibilis?
I think it's an extra I.
Gibilis. Because this one is sensibilis. But it could be that there's some Sunday there, but whatever. Somehow or another it reminds me of this big bird, like, you know, something. Yeah, like that or something. That's the practical world, since the only things in it that we can call real are what our senses can perceive, and more importantly, what they can seize. The practical world is not all that complicated, right? Because a pragmatist, unless you can gain something, you can seize it and control it and get benefit from it, it's not real. So for them, this contemplation, this intellectualizing, is not for them real. But the point is it's all based on that. That's how it works. So they only look at the immediate. So it's like nitiists. They only deal with niti, what you can get immediately. So they don't even look at long term. Some of them will deal with bigger, you know, artha. You know, it'll be applied in artha, but really they're niti by philosophy. Yes.
It's not an economical point, even that one is more intellectual.
Yes, it means it's that fruitive point. So you have the karmi and jnani, but in it, it's talking about the immediate rather than the longer. Than because in other words, they will do something immediately that gets an effect. Now the smarter ones are always on top of it. So as it is unfolding, they will keep making adjustments to bring it in line. Because the point is you can only correct something that's moving. You can't correct something that's doing nothing. Does that make sense? So it does work. In other words, as niti, it's good. But the problem is if that's all you're dealing with, in other words, it doesn't match the theory, how do you actually know what to correct it to? So they'll only correct it as much as their experience. Does that make sense? So they're only as good as their skill. Yeah, the world is not at all that complicated. You just deal with it, get the results, hari bol. And for these people, it is quite straightforward. Besides, scientists are making things easier for us by the minute. They probably complain and say nanosecond, but whatever. The day will come sooner or later when there'll be nothing left for us to do except have a good time, a party without end. Maybe even on other worlds as well as planet Earth. Right, so now we're really getting, you know, so this is the wide range of just, you know, kind of the grunt up to, you know, the real wide. So it's a wide range, this group. This view is neatly summarized by Morris Berman in his book, The Reenchantment of the Worlds. So this is his quote, Morris G. According to modern science, the further back in time we go, the more erroneous are men's conceptions of the world. Our own knowledge in this schema is, of course, not perfect, but we are rapidly eliminating the few remaining errors that do exist and shall gradually arrive at a fully accurate understanding of nature, free of animistic or metaphysical presuppositions. Presuppositions, right? Okay. Just I haven't heard that one for like, I don't know when's the last time I heard that one. This will allow us to attain the sacred goal of the modern world eternal. unhindered sense enjoyment. So that's what they're trying to get to. Modern consciousness thus regards the thinking of the previous ages not simply as other legitimate forms of consciousness, but as misguided worldviews that we have happily overgrown. Right? So this will be the basis why there must be an attack on Vedic culture. Because it's old, it's erroneous. It's from now, we will work it out, we'll make it perfect. You know, that new world that will come out. How long ago was Morris G?
He's living now.
Oh, he's living now. Yeah. But the interesting thing is he's vocalizing it now. But as you mentioned, there was discussion that the patent agency would be closed in the 1890s because they figured that they've reached the limit of invention. You know, then much to their surprise that more came up, you know. A couple of more, okay, we'll finish and then we'll close down, but it just kept going. So that's, you know, 100 years ago. He's probably been professing this for a while, right? He's probably not a kid, right?
He's in his
70s. Yeah, so that means it's 100 years. So they thought that then. You know, so you'll always find that there's this kind of cycle. It's always the same thing. Well, as it turns out, even a world-famous scientist like Albert Einstein had serious doubts about what is really going on and when our senses connect with our objects. Right? So now, here's another view. Right? So you had your pragmatists on like economic, then you have your pragmatists, you know, a little bit more philosophical, that's just going to be sense enjoyment, right? Because, see, the one is just the scientists to work it out, so all we'll have to do is enjoy. Did he actually do anything to deserve it? Technically, no. Now, the other person, it's the practical world, he's willing to go out there, and it's not complicated, make it work, use the senses, see what's there, make it work, get your facilities. Then we'll enjoy. So the difference is the one pragmatist is enjoying now, while the other one, they're supposed to be in the future. But, you know, you never know, because if you go, you know, too far into the future, then you had, you know, one concept was you'd have these very tall, beautiful, you know, angelic-like people, and then you'd have these very short Kali Yuga kind of guys. And then, now and again, when the Kali Yuga guys get hungry, they, you know, herd all these angelic people in and eat them. So that's not exactly what you call perfection in, you know, in paradise there.
He leaves a lot to be desired. Leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, it does. It's I mean, though the Kali Yuga Wallas, they were quite happy. Yes. They thought it was amazing. Right. Right. Okay. In his book, The World as I See It, 1934, he plainly suggested sense perception and the type of reasoning that grows from sense perception may have no meaning whatsoever. Right, not saying it's weak. He just says it may have no meaning whatsoever. Well, these others are, it's what we can perceive, because the point is one, we're going to, what I can perceive, make money off it. The other is what I can perceive, I will use scientifically. And the point of science is to enjoy, live forever and enjoy forever. Right? Yeah. How that works, I'm not quite sure. They haven't worked that one out yet, but they have faith.
Yes.
Okay, so this is then from his book. To inquire after the meaning or object of one's own existence or of creation generally has always seemed to me absurd from an objective point of view. And yet mankind has certain ideals which determine the direction of his endeavors and his judgments. In this sense, I have never looked upon ease and happiness as ends in themselves. Such an ethical basic I call more proper for a herd of swine.
Okay.
Right? Because they're looking for ease and happiness. You know, you think of pigs, you know, what's their endeavor for? You know, they're known for kind of having that attitude. Right? You know. No?
Yeah, they're happy,
you know. Happy, yeah. As happy as a pig, you know. It's like this, you know. So that's like that. So this idea there, but then you have this others. He's saying it seems to be one's, you know, what's one's existence, you know, all these things, what's great. That, to him, that seems absurd. At the same time, is the alternative. That seems like that's fit to his, right?
Yeah.
So, in other words, Einstein didn't consider mankind's proclivity to figure out the purpose of his life on Earth, or for that matter, the purpose of Earth's place in the universe, to be all that reasonable. Similarly, Einstein's contemporary Sigmund Freud considered those who made such inquiries to be mentally ill.
He was doing fine himself.
Yeah, but the point is then if he's mentally ill, then all those who are mentally ill, they're into lust. But we find that those who are doing that, it's not necessarily his lust, so technically then it wouldn't fit into his paradigm. Mm. Right? But Einstein acknowledged that the human nature is ideal-driven, a state of nature that he is certainly prepared to accept, being an idealist himself. However, the pursuit of an ideal, materially easygoing life supported by scientific advancements in the field of sense gratification, Albert Einstein condemned as being an ethical rationale suitable for a herd of pigs. Because right? His ideas, it was more of an intellectual ideal. Right? So it didn't really seem to have a purpose in itself. It was just interesting.
Some concept of higher consciousness.
Right.
Yes. Einstein.
So we see here is, in other words, it's going to always come back to two things, karma and gyan. It's just what kind of flavor of karma and what kind of flavor of gyan. Right? So you have that the practical guy, you know, who's enjoying himself because he's getting results now. Right? There's the one who's talking about the idyllic and we'll get later, but it'll be, you know, kind of more of a pleasant concept of hedonism. Right? Then the reality of it's just hedonistic. Right? And then the gyan about, you know, these other, the peril of the conscious, the metaphysics, and then he's about just the intellectual use of the intelligence. The mechanics of using the intelligence and the experience gained from that. Right, rather than there's something beyond the truth. Right, so in other words, it's not about finding the truth, it's about dealing with truth is fun. You know, interesting.
That's
Einstein. Yes, more of that, you know, because there's no purpose to it, really.
Why he didn't go with the first one?
Because he doesn't really understand what's the benefit. But
what's the benefit?
For which one?
For the first group.
The first group, it's then you're finding the absolute, bringing yourself in line with that absolute. So there is an absolute concept, but it's not here, it's beyond. So you can't actually describe there by using words from here, which is true if you're on the mundane platform. But the point is that you know about there has to come from someplace. So actual knowledge of there is coming through those who are from there, or know, you know, like that. So then one can know about there, here. Is that what it is? So it's slightly different that there's, in other words, it's just slight differences in that. But for them, it's totally different worlds, and they fight like cats and dogs. And within each one of those, you know, Plato tried to be a little different enough from Socrates that, you know, from what I know of, he basically died of old age or something, right?
Yeah,
so he was smart enough. Like that. Aristotle, I'm not sure what happened to him.
He got poisoned just as they listened poisoned just as Socrates.
Aristotle also. Oh, it means, but not knowingly. It wasn't that he's sitting there and quoting philosophy and then drinking it. They just poisoned him. Okay, yeah. So it seems that of the three, then, I say
Socrates was...
Plato
was the smartest, as far as dealing with
depends,
the world.
Depends how you want to look at it.
Well, that's there, but I'm saying he managed to maintain his philosophy, get accepted, and survive.
Yeah.
While the other is that, you know, it's kind of like, it's, you know, after you're gone, then it's appreciated. Like that.
I've heard that Socrates was taking a nap when they came to kill him. And he was like, oh, is that now? Okay. Didn't really care.
Yeah.
Apparently he was quite self-realized.
Mm. Well, we're not saying who's the most elevated. That's not there. It keeps going down.
Yeah.
Okay. Some lofty thinkers concern themselves only with the extramundanus, a world essentially different from the one many try to understand and improve by idealistic reasoning and scientific observation. Such people are sometimes known as metaphysicians, Greek meta, beyond, and physikos, physics, the gross pushing and pulling of matter. The world-renowned stage conjurer Harry Houdini, 1874 to 1926, performer of escape acts so daring some have never been duplicated to this day, distrusted the professional spiritualists and mediums of his time who claimed to be able to, quote-unquote, channel messages of deceased persons to their surviving relatives. Many mediums suffered embarrassing public exposures as charlatans by Houdini. However, he considered himself such a master in the skill of escape artistry that he was positive that after his death, he would surely be able to free himself from the spirit world and contact his wife, Beth. Not only did this not come to pass, but Beth Houdini was even cheated by medium Arthur Ford of the First Spiritualist Church of the New York City.
Interesting story.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of... You know, it all doesn't... never quite works out. That's the problem. Right, so here you're talking about the metaphysics and how it works there. So understanding that, then you can deal with the things. So in other words, he must have had to understand how the body works and everything, so then he could deal with it and do what he would do. From the ancient world to the present, mankind has tried to come to grips with what would seem to be a straightforward, easy-to-answer question. What is reality? Today, some scientists think we are getting closer to the answer by computer-dependent demonstrations of holographic models of the universe and artificial intelligence. Well, the rough idea of a modern computer was conceived by Greek philosopher Aristotle, 384 to 322 BC. He termed the device proton organon, which means first instrument. While Aristotle never proposed the proton organon to be a man-made device, the device it surely was, made out of stellar fire and located in the heart of every human being. The body's senses fed their data into this first instrument and not to the soul. Aristotle believed the soul needed the picture images, phantasmata, in order for it to understand anything of the physical world. But the physical world is not phantasmata by nature. Very much like a computer, the proton organon rewrote sense data into a language of imagery the soul could comprehend. What it comprehended, the soul unhesitatingly accepted as the real material world. But in fact, the data the proton organon transmitted for the soul to see, hear, touch, taste, and smell were, ontologically speaking, illusions. Anu phantasmatos. Quote, without the help of phantasms, wrote Aristotle, the soul is unable to perceive a thing. Right, because you're going to, but he's looking at it as the natural thing. But see, what happens here is because they don't actually understand Vedanta. So they will see things that are actual correct. Like all these philosophies that we're bringing out, they do have an aspect which is correct. And that gives them their basis and why there's some strength to it, or some ability to take it and apply it. But the weakness is they can't see its actual connection with the Lord. So being a complete philosophy, that's going to be a problem. But it is an aspect of philosophy, right? Like a piece of a machine, to try to make it into a complete machine would be very difficult, right? The cog of a machine, and then turn that into, let's say, a unicycle or something, you know? But the problem is you only have the cog, so then, you know, you kind of have to, you know, use a stick to push yourself along or something, you know? Barney would be proud, right? You know, so that kind of thing. But it's. Okay, so now he's getting the things where we're working through our, what we're seeing is according to our samskaras, but he doesn't understand actually what he's dealing with. They just know that there is this subtle body that is dealing with this, and so therefore we're getting. So then you're going to come up with a thing that nothing's real. Or maybe it's real, though, what we're seeing is not. But they don't understand that why it's illusion, because we're not seeing the connection to the Lord. They're thinking it's illusion just on its own, and that's the reality. Does that make sense? So they're always going to fall short. That's why they get so bewildering, because they try to make it sound like it's real. It has substance, but it's only part of what we say. That's why the Vedanta is considered the highest. It's got everything in it. Though some will criticize it because, you know, or was it because it sounds like it's being made to make something that makes everybody happy. But the point is generally we see is when someone tries to make something that brings both parties together, they end up as a third party. Right? Something different that neither party really appreciates. But if it's true that Vedanta has brought all of them together and can deal with all of them, then that means it's the only successful bringing everything together, so that should be appreciated. Yeah. Yes?
What is the meaning Maharaj here in phantasm?
Phantasm, picture images. Phantasmata.
It's like a dream, it's like imagination.
They're putting imagery, that you're seeing imagery. Because there may be, because the problem comes up is what you see may not be what others are seeing. So then how do you explain that? So that means that it's only imagery that we're gaining. The senses are bringing in something that goes into this proton organon. And then it interprets it and brings out something that therefore the soul can appreciate. So they are talking here that the soul is something beyond. Right, the senses and all that. But the problem is they still don't actually understand the position of the soul and, you know, all these things. So they're catching something. They're intelligent. And basically, the other way you can look at it is sense, you do have the situation, the center of the Vedic culture. That is the place where the pious and impious credits are generated. And that, therefore, determines the next position. And so then if it's pious enough to keep you in human life, but not pious enough to keep you within the Vedic context, then you end up as these personalities, you know, around the world. And then, so someone like this, we can understand, was some kind of very prominent scholar, you know, or a prominent musician, or prominent artist, or, you know, it's just like the Sanskrit drama, what it has in it. It's a stage with no props, and you create everything through imagery, right? How does Shakespeare work? Exactly the same. He has these wings in the Sanskrit; they're raised. He just has them going up. And you have these things at the back that are raised that you can stand up. These are elements that are in the Sanskrit drama. No one else uses them, but he's using them. You know, people will dress nicely, talk nicely. That's how you create the whole imagery of it. But it's not by the stage itself. A general Sanskrit stage or Sanskrit drama stage or Shakespearean stage is bare, like that. And then you generate everything from that, because the same stage has to be used for everything. You don't have to worry about moving everything and sandbags dropping and ropes and, you know, all these different things. It's just there. It's nice. You can have it outside. You don't have to have a roof even, you know, like that. So it works really nice. Does that make sense? So all it is they're coming from this previous background. Prabhupada mentioned about Bach. He has elements very similar to the Samaveda. You know, so that means they're coming from this kind of background, but not enough to keep them in contact with the culture. And so then they take birth somewhere else. So it's not strange that they would do that. That's one point of view. Another point of view, since everything's Krishna anyway, and they're contemplating Krishna, so why wouldn't they come up with something, if they're getting any facts at all correct, why wouldn't they come up with something that is dealing what we would call, yes, that's appropriate, because Vedanta is the philosophy that it adjusts everything, because it's the whole creation. They're only observing part of the creation. Does that make sense? So from all these things, and then you have the soul, which is, you know, naturally spiritual, eternal, you know, full of happiness. So then there's going to be that interest to look for those things. So you combine all that together, and that's why then It's not that different. That's why if you know the Vedanta philosophy, you know the culture nicely, you can go into any situation with anybody and find what it is they're looking for and bring that out and show that's connection with the Lord.
Yes.
Right? So that's the... Yeah. The soul is unable... Okay, this doctrine prevailed in Europe until the 17th century. From the Vaishnava standpoint of creation, as established in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the doctrine of world as phantasm is not entirely without merit. But these days, some intellectually endowed persons try to prove, using computer technology as evidence, that illusion is ultimately all there is, quote-unquote, out there, in the cosmos, as far as we humans are able to understand and discuss it amongst ourselves. So if you're dealing on that level, then the problem comes is that, then how can they state they're dealing with the absolute truth? That becomes a problem.
Yes.
Because if they're dealing with computers, we're talking nerds here.
Yes.
Right? So there is some connection with the science and all that kind of aspect.
I heard them say that truth itself is evolving.
Truth is, that's of course, because why is it evolving?
Because
who establishes it?
Yeah.
Because the point is that if there's an absolute, then it wouldn't be evolving. You may get variety within in truth. But here is, otherwise, it's because of how we perceive it. So it's still a point of vox populi.
Yes. So we wouldn't actually call it truth?
No, we wouldn't call it truth. We just call it the particular perception, you know, of the time. Because it always changes from one day to the next. It can change in a moment. That's why you see things are going along. Why do we call, basically, I think it's from, 300 A.D. until, where is it, 1400 or 1600 A.D., right? We call it the Dark Ages. Why? Because nothing happened in there. Everybody just did what they were doing and it went on for hundreds of years. Now and again a little something pops out, you know. But basically nothing. Right? So in other words, something that creates a change in society, that's the ones that we look at.
Enlightenment.
Yeah, the Enlightenment, or let's say the Russian Revolution, or these things that people get right into, because that's where then you've got this change. But otherwise it's the same thing. You know, the guy goes out in the morning and takes his shovel and shovels the cow dung and composts it and puts it out in his fields and grows his, you know, rutabagas or whatever he's growing. You know, and then, you know, he eats those and all that, and, you know, they have the kids, and the kids grow up and they get married, and then they, you know, build themselves, you know, a place, and they have their animals, and then, you know, he goes out in the morning and shovels the cow dung. Nobody wants to hear about it. You know, basically you've described 1,000 years of history. So that's the thing, is that they're trying to find these where there's changes, because variety is what's interesting. That's the problem. So it's the same phantasma as that. The historians, they only document a combination between what they're interested in and what people are willing to accept. Because the point is you don't get paid for coming up with history that nobody wants to hear about. Right? So a historian who is into history as a hobby, he'll come up with stuff that a historian who as a professional won't or can't afford to. Because, you know, he won't lose his job. It's more interesting. So, yeah.
What this has to do with the first chapter?
What is this? Because we're talking about the first step in self-realization, we're talking about the manifestation. Right, because this is called the cosmic creation, cosmic manifestation. Right? In other words, the first one was dealing with the principle of the Lord. He's the one where all this comes from. Right? Because the Lord is performing his pastime. How does he do his pastimes? But just to give an example, where does Krishna put his turban? Okay. Good. Okay. You know, where does he hang the necklaces? Okay. Where does he walk? Okay, not on the walls or stuff like that. You know, you come in and he's walking on the ceiling. You know. Like that. So in his pastimes, there's, you know, one of his kids drops something and it goes up and sticks on the ceiling. So Krishna has to walk up the wall and then pick it up and walk back down. No. So where did that come from? Yes. So that's the whole point, is that the basis that this material cosmos, the cosmic manifestation, is manifest by Brahma, is based on an already existing system created by the Lord. So we'll be looking at the mechanics of it. That'll come up, be explained. But it's actually the Lord's pastimes are the source of the mechanics. It's not because there's mechanics that he's sitting around, well, how to do this and stuff like that, you know? So he doesn't have to do that. So he's... Yeah, it's an interesting point. Have you ever seen anybody who's a real intellectual, really thinking, and they sit there kind of bent over with their hand on the chin? You like that?
No. They don't actually appear to be thinking that much.
Yeah.
That's not at all.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense. Not that explains it. Okay. So, does that make sense? So, in other words, the first canto is describing the primary creation, what is the Lord, and then his will. Then, now this is describing the second. So, what we're doing, but to do that, what's the meaning of this, the secondary creation, if you can't connect it to the primary? And we're situated in the secondary. What's the meaning of elevation if we can't elevate ourselves from the secondary to the primary? Right? So the body's not going to, but with the consciousness can. Does that make sense? So you're dealing with very important major concepts here. So what Sokumar is pointing out here is that you have here, the Vedanta is giving so nicely and clearly just the point, position, the universal form, and how one can elevate oneself by seeing that connection, you know, between the secondary and the primary creation, like that. And but we see is that others trying to wrestle with the same concept, because the same questions come up, because they're just human. That's why Einstein has to accept it, because it's universal. Everybody asks these questions. No matter what culture, what society, what strata, they're all asking this question. So it has to be accepted, though he doesn't really see the importance of it. Right? Does that make sense? But just because he doesn't see the importance, this means he didn't come across someone who can explain it. Right? And in his day, how many other people were as smart as he was? Like that. Okay. This is Nirvisesha Shunyavadi philosophy, and whether it is served up by a proton organon or not, it remains what it is, Mayavadi philosophy. Right? Because it's just talking about, it's just an illusion, that's all there is. We're saying there it's an illusion how you perceive it if you're not seeing a connection to the Lord. But the point is that you see a particular aspect of God's creation, and only that, and if someone else sees something different, that doesn't make it an illusion. Because God being unlimited, there's unlimited qualities and aspects. So you, according to your nature, will see those qualities that you can relate to. In other words, those qualities on which is the platform for your interaction with God, your relationship with God. So just as the Lord's unlimited, that means the jivas that come from the Lord and his energies then are unlimited. So the personalities are unlimited, but he is the sum total of all that. So he can deal with everybody. Right? And then the internal potency, that means the Sarup Shakti, is the complete whole of that on the, you know, of all that aspect of personality on the Shakti level. So that is your real platform of Shakti-Shakti-Mani interaction. But everything else is then in support of that. So, therefore, it's not an illusion that someone sees something different. So for them to say it is an illusion, it's actually Mayavada philosophy. But we will also mention that phenomena, and if it's not in connection to the Lord, then it is an illusion. Not that what they're seeing is not how their senses work and all that, because we have to understand this. But he's putting it into, okay, you have the proton organon. Does there a discussion of where that came from? It won't come up. It doesn't go back that far. They just go back until that's the limit of what they can deal with. Because there's always that point where, in other words, the next step has to be God.
He calls God the unmoved mover.
The unmoved mover. Okay. Okay. So it's not just Chinese who do stuff. The unmoved mover. And you see all the also the unshaken shaker.
The unseen seer.
The unseen seer, yeah. Yeah, so it says, so, yeah. Does that make sense? So, therefore, they don't deal so much with that, because even though he's there, we always see the discussion's always on this side. For us, the discussion's on this side only as long as we're to get us to that side. That's the whole point. That's why it's different. That's why others, they sound different. They sound so intellectual. Mm-hmm. They just come up with big fancy words. We already have fancy words. You know what I'm saying? Somebody said, oh, if you use Prabhupada's vocabulary, it's not enough to discuss philosophy. No, the point is that the Sanskrit is able to do it. He's put it into words that you do. So you just have to know what that Sanskrit word meant if you want to do that, because the guys with the fancy words still don't know what it is. You know, can the proton organon be broken down into mind, intelligence, and false ego? How does it connect with the senses? How does the soul actually see? You know, what's the mechanic of the consciousness reflecting off of the mirror of the intelligence? Right? And therefore, being put through the senses onto the sense object, you can see it, it reflects back, and then that's all digested. That's his proton organon. But he can't explain. But at the same time, where does that power come from? Because there has to be potency to do that. Right? You're reflecting your consciousness, but you're seeing something. But how does that concept of the principle that seeing works? Why is there sense and sense object? And then there's the eye. Where does that come from? That's coming from the Lord. That's the primary creation. So these are the levels that they just don't get to, but they get up to a certain point, make it really fancy, confuse everybody, and then they go, ooh, so intellectual. But actually not that intellectual. Intelligent people, but it's not that their philosophy is that well thought out. You know what I'm saying? That they can think on that level shows they're intelligent. Right, so that credit should be given where credit's due. But that intelligence is Krishna's intelligence. So until it's connected to Krishna, it's still a waste of time. But now if you can convince them of the philosophy, they'll be able to contemplate it very nicely. Does that make sense? Right, others read this stuff and they end up not necessarily well situated in Krishna consciousness. You know, here this person reads it and shows how it's Mayavada, shows how it comes into, you know, where it's based in our on our philosophy. But only taking that part, it ends up as Mayavada. That's the difference. Okay. Now, for a balanced, quote-unquote, package that allows whatever is progressive in the above philosophical positions to smoothly mature into genuine God consciousness. Right. Srila Prabhupada describes the Varnashram system. Right? Do we make that connection there? That's why Varnashram is so hard to understand. Because if you can think on that other level, then it means sense. Because who sits in society as a karmi and contemplates how society works, how like that. It means the only book really written strongly on an overall social system that I know of, I may be wrong, and maybe others, is Plato's, right? Called the Republic, right? And you know, so that's a few thousand years ago. No one's written that. I mean, of course, Machiavelli put something together, but it was, you know, specifically just how to ensure that you got what you wanted, you know, like that. You know, practical also, but the point is, and then who else wrote?
Leviathan, something like that.
Okay, so there's three guys in 2,500 years, right? You know, and the Kali Yuga stuff has been going for 5,000. So three guys in 5,000 years, right? That's not that impressive. Mm-hmm. You know, that's every 1,000.
700.
Yes, 700 years. You know, so okay. Therefore, the complete social construction is the body of the Lord, and all the parts of the body, namely the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, the vaisyas, and the shudras, are meant to serve the Lord's whole body conjointly. So, I mean, it's not a contemplated thing. One can't get disturbed, really, that people don't understand varnashram, because it's beyond the scope of their practical thinking. It's not an area they've thought about before. They either just thought about, you know, doing a little work, getting some money, and enjoying sense gratification, or that, you know, we're going to, through our philosophies and our science, we're going to develop the perfect world in which everyone can live eternally in sense gratification, you know, or, you know, some variety of something. Basically, that's what most people are dealing with. Right? Very few are on this intellectual platform. Right? You know what I'm saying? So it's more of a. How many places have sidewalk cafes?
France
has.
Greece
has.
Spain
has. Okay, North. Now where are all your philosophers from?
France.
Greece.
Okay. Yeah. Not so much.
That's the point.
It's too hot in Spain.
Yeah, so yeah, come on, evening is too late. You'll be able to sit all day. So, you know, the guys that come in the morning and evening, they're the wimps. The guys that sit there all day, they're the guys. Yeah, I remember it was a thing in the, at least our you know, what do you call it, village. Then I don't know if they were the bank coffee shops. I think they were more tea shops. But in other words, these hippie hangout joints. Is that you didn't? There wasn't. No one had ever asked you to leave, so you could sit there all day. Because if you sat there, you'd be discussing very important philosophical concepts, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, they just left you alone. So you could just come in and sit down, even if you didn't order anything. You were, you know, adding to the ambience. I don't think they practice that anymore, but it definitely doesn't make money. So. Okay.
So then, according to that, can we say that the predominant mode now that the world is working is according to the second theory, realistic?
That's the guys who are successful and actually run the society. And then most others are kind of with the thing, science and everything else, so they can happen, or they're just mudas, be practical as much as their little bit is. So they're kind of in that category. They're all in the area of karmi. And it's just a matter of whether they're just you know, in the mode of ignorance, or there's some mode of passion, right? And if there's the passion, is it going to come out by your hard work, or is it going to come out by some intellectual kind of element? So it's just kind of which mode is prominent. But basically, karmi. Jnani is not that popular these days. So that's the difficulty. Varnashram needs some intelligence to understand. Or you just do it. Because Shastra said, Prabhupada's mentioned it, you just do it. Or, if you want to question it, then have enough intelligence to go into it and understand the background behind it. Because if it's the body of the Lord, it can't be wrong. You know? Like that. You can't say, you know, we want extra toes here. You know? Why there's a big toe and a little toe? Shouldn't they all be equal?
Yeah.
You know?
Sure wouldn't. Toe chauvinism.
Yes.
Chauvinism.
Chauvinism.
Yes.
Very chauvinistic.
Yes, chauvinistic.
Okay. So the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaisyas, and Shudras are meant to serve the Lord's whole body conjointly. Otherwise, the parts become unfit to be coordinated with the supreme consciousness of oneness. Right? Universal consciousness is factually achieved by coordinated service of all concerned with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that alone can ensure total perfection. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.36 purport. So here, this universal consciousness means it's seeing Krishna everywhere, in everything, all the living entities, everything's connected. You can see the variety. It's not impersonal, but you can see that whole. So you won't get that unless there is coordination. If you try to take one and make it prominent, you know, over the other, then it's a problem. So everything has its position. You know, it's just like we're the other day. We're sitting here discussing about, you know, weakness of administrative systems. And then when it comes up about, oh, we don't need these kind of things, I say, well, what do you mean we don't need these? You know, we're able to sit here peaceful in that because there is some kind of administration. Right? That's the whole point. If there's no administration, there is no peaceful situation. Like that. So everything works together. If there's no peaceful situation, then where, how do you make money? People only invest and spend money if it's peaceful. Right? When it's peaceful, then you get the emerging middle class. Otherwise, as soon as there's conflict, the middle class disappears immediately. It just evaporates. Right? You know what I'm saying? If you have a whole bombed out city, you know, who's left in it?
Poor
right?
People.
Poor people. And then there's a few rich people. And they're probably sitting in their, you know, chalet somewhere, right? Because, you know, you don't want to be around when they're dropping bombs. Right? So that's the point. You end up with these two. You don't end up with something else. You know, so when, I forget what it was. It was some kind of like hill resort that the Germans had made. They're kind of like their perfect like city. And all that was up there, that's just where the officers went in that. And they had, you know, all, when they went around, you know, Europe as they conquered, they had all kinds of, like, very, very valuable arts and, you know, whatever was the best that was available in Europe, they had there. Like that. And so, you know, so you had that. You know, at the same time, you had people living in burned out rubble buildings and just kind of hoping that, you know, they don't drop another bomb on them. You know what I'm saying? So where's the middle class? That's my point. So as there's peace, there has to be administration. When there's peace, then you have that. So it's always a thing. So as soon as there's war, it goes down. As soon as there's not, it comes up again. Is that so? So therefore, unless it is done conjointly, you won't actually get this universal understanding. If you focus it only on one part, it won't work. Okay. This is the Vedic rendition of synoptic philosophy, an all-inclusive worldview by which the relationship of all things with one another are made evident in accordance with basic theistic principles that pervade the universe. Right? Basic theistic principles pervade the universe. That's why it's called Sad Dharma. So in other words, if you see Varnashram in connection with the Lord, that's Sad Dharma. It connects everything. You know, your worldview with all the other worldviews with the Lord. Right? If not, you're going to end up with all these worldviews that they just don't get along. They just, that these individual groups, they really dislike each other. Like that. The only thing is the practical guy will use the scientists to get things done and make money. Right? Like that. And if you can make money off of the philosophical things in schools, then he'll do it. But nowadays, I think all these kind of departments are being really, you know, thinned down. Like that. I heard Greek literature is already long gone. You know, it's not even an option anymore. You know, how do you make money off of Greek literature? Right? Okay. is that we seeing the connection here? So it's not just, we just see, oh, it's a bunch of rules of some, you know, mundane kind of thing. And then we're going to follow the mundane rules of modern society. That's the replacement. And that's somehow another great. How does that work? So this is complete. That's why Prabhupada talks about it so much. The philosophy in Varnashram. Because that's the social environment in which you'll apply the principles of ashram dharma, which is the spiritual. The sanctification of human life by bringing society into harmony with a universe that, when properly understood, is a form of the Lord, is perhaps most properly expressed in Western terminology by the word cosmotheism. Quote, perhaps most properly expressed, end quote, because those who claim to be cosmotheists, who take the word to be a synonym for pantheism, the notion that anything and everything in the universe is equally God. So here's where the connection comes. But it's not actually, it's going beyond what they see, because there's the person. Oh, that was the third book.
It wasn't published.
Yeah, I'm that was the online publish.
Yeah. He based it on a book that he got from Vrindavan, a retired professor there. It was his contribution towards the planetary display.
Oh, okay. So you use that?
We have that as a resource, yeah.
Okay. The Veda conclusion that the Supreme Lord is Adi Purusha, Sri Krishna, who is personally located in Goloka Vrindavan. At the same time, by the expansion of Sachintya Shakti, he impersonally pervades the whole material creation. Until one arrives at this conclusion, one remains at risk of falling into one or more of the confused philosophical positions described in the beginning of this study guide. Because as we go through this, it's not that parts of these we might not use in our conditioned life, right? Because otherwise, what does that mean? So that's why you bring the conditioning in line with. So one may think, well, I don't fit into that. No, everything fits into that.
Yes.
You know, everything fits into that. Just the problem is nowadays, you know, how you say tribal is kind of a derogatory term, but you know, but otherwise, you know, we have our spot. You know, we fit into the Vedic system, right? You know, yeah. But every kind of intellect and need is fitted into there. Why? Because it's the part of the body of the Lord. And what is the universal form? The body of the Lord. Everything is situated in the body of the Lord. So when we take, does that make sense? So this connection between all this. So that beginning stage of bridging the gap between the material and spiritual, and how to engage, you know, the social, economic, all these different aspects. That's all in one system. So all that's in one system, that's why it makes it so hard to understand, because that means it's so sophisticated that it's beyond anybody's previous experience. There's no one can claim before coming in contact with the Gaudiya Vaishnavas or with Vaishnavism, you know, proper Sampradayic Vaishnavism, that can say they dealt with that level of sophistication of such a complete system. It's impossible, because there is no resource to draw from. Okay. The yogi should meditate upon the cosmos as the Virat Rup, or universal form of the Lord. Success in this meditation certainly entails coming to the Vasudeva Sattva platform, in which Vasudeva Sarvam ET. Sri Krishna in his Vasudeva form is perceived to be everything. Such is the knowledge of one who has perfected Kshetragya. Oh, who is a perfected Kshetragya. Right? In other words, he actually sees what the field actually is. In other words, it's connected to the Lord. It is the Lord. As Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to Bhagavad Gita 13.3, while every soul situated in the material body may be termed Kshetragya, nor of the field of activities, or the living entity who is aware of a particular body. The question remains whether that living entity actually understands correctly what he is aware of. Right? Because that's the problem, isn't it? Like Aristotle gives. He's aware through the, what is it, proton organon. But the point is he actually aware correctly of what he's aware of? Because they say it's phantasma, but okay, what does that mean? Why it's that way? Why does it work that way? So they're not actually even aware of what they're aware of. So it's a very interesting section of the philosophy, as you can
take the same word and repeat it so many times, each one has a different meaning of what it. You know what I'm saying? Because you're getting closer to the Brahman platform, so that's where you get all these kind of dual meaning of, you know, what did we say, the non-moving mover. Yes, yeah. Quote, one who does not understand the field of activity and the knower of activity, writes his divine grace, is not perfect in knowledge. So if you don't know the soul and the material body, what's connected to it and how the soul is perceiving that, you don't actually have perfect knowledge. In a Srimad Bhagavatam lecture given in Bombay on 8th November 1974, Srila Prabhupada explained, if there is something wrong in the electric line, I cannot repair it. I call one mystery. He knows the art. He immediately revives the electric current. So this sort of knowledge is called silpa, silpa jnana, artistic knowledge. That is not knowledge. Real knowledge is Vedic knowledge. Vedanta knowledge is to know oneself. What I am, what is God, Bhagavan, what is my relation with Him, what is my duty, and what is the ultimate goal of life. Right? So God, Bhagavan, relationship with Him, what is my duty, right? The ultimate goal. Okay. Yeah. This is knowledge. Etaj jnanam tad jnanam anyata yata. Krishna says, this is jnanam. Bhagavad Gita 13:12. Kshetram kshetra gyam jnanam. Bhagavad Gita 13:1. Jnanam, if one can understand oneself and the Supreme Self, and what is this material world, why we have come here, what is my relation with God, what is my relation with this world, this is knowledge. They are called jnanavan. So that's the... So that's the first chapter. So that opens. Now we'll get into the technical of how these things work. That's the opening of technical. That's the preamble of technical. No, but the other technical a little more. We've been hearing it. In other words, what we were discussing when we were dealing the first year of Gita, all these from all through, is the perspective from this second canto. So we're kind of a little bit more used to it. But now we're getting into the actual, that in its form here. Right? In other words, same knowledge on a more developed level. So, yes? What? 30 seconds, whether it's all, the class will end before they end, they hang up or something. No? Okay, review questions, essay questions. And then in this, then there is a, how you say, the extra credit you have here, a, how you say, how many pages is it? Four pages? Four and a bit?
Of course.
That explains how to deal with, or so you understand what is the extra credit question. You should probably get credit for actually understanding the point.
Not compulsory.
It's
not compulsory.
No. Okay. Okay, so then we're up to chapter 2, Lord in the Heart. So that took us through, wow, that was 32 pages. I had a lot of these technical. Okay, so then we'll start with this on Thursday. Yes, tomorrow's Wednesday.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.